I'm Brian Settles, area saxophonist, teacher, and supporter of WPFW. And you are tuned to member-supported WPFW, Washington.
Good evening. My name's Garland Nixon, and you are listening to me and my esteemed panelist, Mark Levine. The name of the show is News Views. On every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m., we have a lot of great guests on the show. If you haven't caught the show before, we have great guests. We've had, just to name a few, we've had Congressman Donna Edwards and Congressman Chris Van Hollen, two of our favorites. We've had a few weeks back, we had Nancy Silverkleit, the co-CEO and majority owner of Archie Comics. We've had a great guest, Chris Mooney, author of The Republican War on Science and The Republican Brain, two great books. I'm actually finishing up The Republican Brain now. Very good book. Last week we had Dr. Alan Lichtman, the author of The Keys to the White House, a great book, and White Christian Nation. So we've had politicians, we have authors, and we've had mega corporation owners. Tonight, we're waiting on our guest any minute now, but Mr. Tim Carpenter, he is the National Director of PDA, Progressive Democrats for America. And what we're going to be talking about, they have, as soon as we can get them on the line, should be shortly, tomorrow they're going to have something called the People's Inauguration. It's over at UDC at the David Clark Law Center, I believe, Mark?
UDC? I don't remember the name of the law center.
Yeah, the Clark Law Center at UDC. It's from 8 until about 4:30, yeah. 4 o'clock.
The inauguration itself is on noon Monday. I'm going to attend the real thing. Yeah. No disrespect to PDA, but I'm going to be out there watching Obama. He'll be a tiny, tiny little speck. I don't have any special tickets. I'll be out there in the cold.
Well, this is
Are you going to be out there?
I'm not going to be out there, Mark.
You come 4 years ago?
Well, I was in D.C.
Did you attend the inauguration?
I went over and hung out at Bus Boys and Poets. It was too cold.
Garland, this is history.
I drank, some hot chocolate or something
You went in for hot chocolate? I kind of understand the people that went 4 years ago and aren't going this year because the re-election of a president isn't exciting as a new president. But 4 years ago, you didn't want to admit that to me. You went in for hot chocolate instead of watching Obama.
It was like 17 degrees or something.
I remember. I was out there with 2 million of my closest friends.
Oh, good. 2 million of your
closest friends.
Yeah. But tomorrow, well, let me tell you a little bit about what's happening. It's you know, for those out there who are progressive-minded or at least concerned with what's going on in the progressive community, why this is important is they're going to talk about policy. Because as we're seeing today, it appears that the president is going to take a different tack regarding policy in the next 4 years. It seems that there is what he'll get through the House and what he won't is a whole other story, but he seems to be taking a more progressive position as far as his policies, more aggressive and progressive. And tomorrow they're going to be discussing everything from how to get it done, what policy should be addressed. What are your thoughts, Mark, while we're waiting for our guests on the issue of policy and whether or not it appears that the president is taking a different he's a different guy this time around.
I would argue, Garland, that you and me and Terry DeKester on the Raucous Caucus precipitated this move when we had an Obama intervention.
Yeah.
Now, this is important because not that he necessarily was listening to us only, but back in 2011, the summer of 2011, when Obama at that time caved to the Republicans on the debt ceiling and on leaving taxes low for millionaires and so forth, you and I and, frankly, progressives all across the country complained.
Yes.
And we said, Obama, you can't compromise with these people. There used to be 20, 30, 40 years ago, Ronald Reagan, Tip O'Neill, there was a time when Republicans and Democrats compromised with each other. But that time has passed, and these Republicans just wanted to see you not get reelected. Mitch McConnell, leader in the Senate, famously said, we just want to make sure Obama serves one term.
Yeah, he said so that was his first priority.
If you can't compromise with the Republicans and do things that Republicans used to support, like cap and trade, immigration reform, and deficit reduction, and so forth, you might as well go back to your first principles, because they're not playing ball with you anyway. And I would argue that really ever since 2011, Obama has been coming home, even more so in 2012, and I think you're right, more in 2013. But I think he learned, much like Bill Clinton, frankly, learned after his first 2 years in office, that he couldn't compromise with recalcitrant Republicans, so he might as well come home and support the progressive views he does all along.
Do you think that the president was kind of, say, walking kind of softly, kind of, you know, being very careful during the first term so as not to get too far ahead of public opinion, that he was kind of, you know what I mean, that he was kind of holding back to get, as many presidents will do, holding back, saying, I'm going to do what I can, but I have to hold back until I'm a lame duck, and then I can really
I do think so, but I also think it was a mistake, because you really could divide his first term up into the first 2 years when he had a Democratic Congress and the second 2 years. And I think he played it careful in his first 2 years, and what happened in 2010? The Democrats lost in a landslide. So I think Obama has learned that playing it careful and leading from behind, as the criticism that's so often been attributed to him, that I think there's frankly some merit there. Letting others direct the agenda and then coming in at the end didn't serve him well. And I think now he is showing leadership on gun reasonable gun regulation, or on immigration reform, or on gay civil rights, or on the deficit, or the debt ceiling. You're seeing the president take stands much earlier now. I frankly think he learned his lesson, and he was too passive in his first couple years, and I think we have a very activist next 4 years.
Yeah, I think that also, and this is not unusual if you look at the history of presidents. You know, most the presidents are two-term presidents, and that is, you know, people say, well, was he prepared or prepared? Most presidents learn over the course of their first, you know, most presidents learn a lot over the course of their first, look at Bill Clinton.
Bill Clinton definitely did.
And you know, they kind of feel their way around, and their second term is when they are able to have to get more concrete legislation through, and where they're more generally speaking, they're more powerful. They use the office more in the second term.
I mean, there are exceptions. I would argue
the FDR came out.
I was just going to say that's exactly the one I was going to make. Franklin Roosevelt hit the ground running. I think Lyndon Johnson hit the ground running.
And of course, Lincoln.
And Lincoln.
But what choice
did
he have? The ground was running after him.
But here's my point. I actually think the greatest of presidents, and I think Obama's a good president. I'm not willing to use the great word yet, but the greatest of presidents, people like Roosevelt and Lyndon Johnson, who, with the horrible exception of Vietnam, was a wonderful progressive president.
The bottom line is this, I'll say, he left a legacy of some very positive, powerful, progressive.
So
regardless of that, what was left after he left?
I think Obama is no Johnson or Roosevelt, but he's also no Jimmy Carter either. He left us with good, solid performance that I think can go a lot farther, and I think that's what Tim Carpenter is going to tell us today. The Obama health care bill was good, but it didn't go far enough. We don't have universal care. Dodd-Frank was good. It regulated financial entities, but it didn't go far enough. We still have too big to fail. So in the second term, it's time for him to finish the job and go further. And also, I mean, he was afraid to talk about guns four years ago. He's talking about them now. So there's a whole bunch of things. He was against gay people's right to get married 4 years ago. He's for it now. So I think Obama is moving forward. And what's interesting is that his approval ratings are higher now than when he was being cautious. He's at a solid 55% approval rating right now. When he was being cautious, he had numbers below 50 in 2010. Now, part of it was the economy,
right,
to be sure.
There's no question, and I made that. You know, I made the observation, and I still feel that way to some extent. And that is that during what hurt him the worst from 2008 to 2010, and going into those midterm elections, was the fact that the economy was so bad. He didn't cause it, but.
When unemployment is high, presidential numbers are low.
Well, speaking of honored guests, besides Mark Levine here, we now have Mr. Tim Carpenter, the National Director of the Progressive Democrats of America. Welcome to WPFW 89.3 FM.
Good evening. Thanks so much for having us. Sorry we're running a little late here getting set up for Progressive Central, but we're here, and thanks so much for the opportunity.
We know you're a busy person, Tim. Tell us what you're setting up.
Tomorrow we've got a great event. We hope anybody that's listening can join us. We're going to be gathering over at UDC for what we are billing as a Progressive Central. This is the third time Progressive Democrats of America have come together with our members of Congress who help us through the Congressional Progressive Caucus, as well as some of our best friends in the progressive movement, folks from John Nichols to Medea Benjamin to Bill Fletcher. We've got a great crowd of folks coming together as early as 7:30, and we plan on being here all day tomorrow.
Will there be some members of Congress in...
You bet. We're very honored. We like to laugh within Progressive Democrats of America. We work with the left wing of the Democratic Party, and some of those best members are going to be with us tomorrow. The vice chair, or the chair of the Progressive Caucus, Raul Grijalva, will be joining us at 1 o'clock over here at UDC. At 11 o'clock, Congressman Jim McGovern from Massachusetts, yeah, who's the second-ranking member of Congress on the Rules Committee, is going to be here with Congressman John Conyers, the ranking member of the Progressive Caucus and the Black Caucus, to talk about the challenges we face in the progressive community. And newer members of Congress, a good friend who's returning, we're very excited about, Alan Grayson from Florida will be here, and Mark Pocan, who's the new Congress member out from Wisconsin. So we'll have a number of members of Congress to be with us. It should be a great day.
Tim, I was going to say, the event's open to the public?
Absolutely.
No charge?
Their tickets are $30 while they last. We encourage folks to get down here early tomorrow, and we can get you in. And we're going to be at the UDC school at 4340 on Connecticut Avenue at the U.S. David School of Law. That's the location of the event, up on the fifth floor.
That's the David Clark School of Law, I believe?
Correct.
Yes.
The David Clark School of Law. That's us.
And you start about 8 o'clock. So if someone wants to get there tomorrow, and certainly there will be progressive members of Congress, and someone wants to, you know, I'm sure some of our listeners want to get out there and you know, actually have a word and influence the congressional policy, that's the time to do it.
Now, you don't have to go all 8 hours, right? I mean, if you get up late...
we'll be here all day. The other thing is, if you can't make it down, or for whatever reason, we'll be live streaming Free Speech TV. If you go to pdamerica.org, you can watch it online. We'll be screening all day. So yeah, if you can't get down here, or you can only get down here for a portion, we welcome you to be here. Again, just to back up a little bit to give people a sense of how the day will unfold, beginning at 8 in the morning is going to be a panel on the climate summit. We're going to talk very much about the crisis we face with many friends from our environmental movement. Probably the best named person folks out there know would be Ted Glick from the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. Then at 9:15, those that are working very much on the peace and justice movement, Medea Benjamin from Code Pink, is going to help us to lead that panel. And then at 10:15, as we said earlier, we're going to talk a lot about what we can do with the labor movement and with our friends in Congress. And then at 11 o'clock, as we said, Congressmember McGovern and Conyers will be here at 11. And then at 1 o'clock, we talked a little bit about Raul Grijalva, the co-chair of the Progressive Caucus. He'll be joined by Tom Hartman, another good friend on Progressive Radio, and Mark Pocan, the other congressmember that will be here. And then we close out the day, as we said, with Alan Grayson. So that's a quick sketch of what the day is looking like.
Well, and let me recommend this to my listeners, you know, particularly get there at 11 to see Congressman Conyers. And let me tell you why. Monday is Martin Luther King's birthday, and Congressman John Conyers is the person who is responsible. If it not for Congressman Conyers, Martin Luther King's birthday would not be a national holiday. He actually, Mark and I talked to him. We had a discussion with him about that. And he said that he put in, what was about 15 years, 13 years?
Yeah, he said it was more than a decade.
Every year he would introduce a bill. And he fought for it and fought for it. And now Martin Luther King's birthday is a national holiday. And thanks to things like that, you know, we're in a position where a person of color has an opportunity to hold the highest office in the land.
Let me say this about John Conyers real quick. With the death of Senator Inouye, John Conyers is now the second longest serving member of Congress. He's been there, I think it's about 38 years. I have to check my mind. It's a long time. I know that he was there long enough
I know he's been there since the 60s. Like 65, 68. Over 40 years.
I can't do the math in my head right now.
It's his 22nd term, 44 years.
44 years. Right.
Guys have been saying, the other thing, yeah. I mean, not only Martin Luther King's birthday, but as you've been saying, that stretch of time, and you were mentioning the holiday of Dr. King. Do you remember the real Dr. King? There was only one member of Congress that Dr. King endorsed in his entire lifetime. People may have forgotten that it was John Conyers.
Wow.
It was John Conyers who led the impeachment efforts.
I was just going to say that.
Richard Nixon.
It was John Conyers
who led the impeachment efforts most recently on Vice President Dick Cheney, and he's the guy that's been out front, as you gentlemen have said, for decades. And this is a great opportunity to meet informally and talk about those challenges we face, and most importantly, to thank him for being out front on those issues. And he'll talk a lot tomorrow about the ongoing fight for single-payer health care. He certainly hasn't given up, nor have we, while Congress turns its backs once again on the 27 million Americans who will be left without health insurance. Even when the Affordable Care Act goes into full effect, Congressman Conyers is still fighting on a single-payer front. We're going to talk a lot about that tomorrow and the challenges we face on that front. So, again, I agree with both of you that he's a gentleman that deserves your attention and to come out and to thank him.
One thing I know, Tim, is that he calls it now Medicare for all. I agree with that politically. Single payer scares some people away. They don't really know what it means. We all know in the community, but for the public out there, just say Medicare for all, because we all know what Medicare is, and frankly,
sure.
It's a program that
no,
works really well.
Nobody out. We have PNHP doctors who insist on single payer, but as you've indicated, what we're talking about is enhanced, improved Medicare for all. Everybody in, nobody out. I totally agree.
And also, you know, just to our listeners, to let you know, if you know, I'm sure a lot of you have friends and family who have come to town for the inauguration, who want to go around and see what's going on. Well, this is an opportunity of a lifetime tomorrow. Of certainly, PDA is going to have a great lineup of guests tomorrow. But again, as I said, you know, a civil rights icon, they've come to see this inauguration. It's Martin Luther King's birthday. You've got relatives or friends who've come to town, maybe staying at your place. There's not a better favor you could do for them than bring them over to the David Clark Auditorium at the UDC Law Center tomorrow, so they could see John Conyers. They may get a chance to say hi to him or shake his hand. Who knows? But it's something,
oh,
you know.
We did this 4 years ago out in Denver around the National Convention. Mm-hmm. Carson Conyers would stay with the whole day. I wouldn't be surprised that he'll be with us through the day. So again, as you said, it's an informal opportunity to meet with him, not only to hear him, but to spend some time with him. He'll be with us through the afternoon.
Wonderful. Now, let's start from somewhere that with the baseline that we never started. For those of our listeners who don't know, let's start with telling them, what is Progressive Democrats of America, the organization? What is PDA, and what is the mission?
Well, Progressive Democrats of America was founded in 2004 when the Democrats were meeting the last day when they gathered in Boston to anoint or to elect or to officially name John Kerry our nominee. And it was during that election cycle, if folks can remember, that both Dennis Kucinich and Howard Dean were running for the presidency. And the issues that had really galvanized many Democrats during that election really never got the debate we had hoped for. The progressive community around the country had been mobilized, and we were hoping to have a real debate with Congressman Kucinich and Howard Dean. But in short order, the party pretty much anointed Kerry the nominee, and we never really had that discussion. So many of us who gathered at the National Convention the last day said, we want to keep this fight going inside the Democratic Party. And we mean by the fight is for those who gathered at that convention in 2004, as we said, who supported Medicare for All, enhanced Medicare for All, those who supported getting out at that time of the Iraq invasion. Of the delegates that were on the floor that night, 77% of the delegates were opposed to the invasion at that time in Iraq. So we gathered the following day at Roxbury Community College to build a movement both inside and outside the Democratic Party. We call ourselves an insurgency. We're not the Democratic Party. We're those that are working both inside and outside. And what we mean by inside and outside is to work at the grassroots level with your Democratic Party, but also to bring that street heat, to bring the peace movement, the peace and justice movement, to bring the environmental movement, the women's movement inside the Democratic Party. Every great social movement, as we're celebrating Dr. King, not only the civil rights leader, but the anti-war leader. It was Dr. King who, working with Rosa Parks, began a movement by Rosa simply sitting down on the back of the bus that led to Lyndon Johnson signing
the
Civil Rights and Voting Rights Act. So it begins in the streets and goes to Congress, and that's what PDA was about. And we began that struggle in 2004, and today we have over 75 chapters around the country working on this effort.
Great. And a little bit about your background and how you became, what did you do before PDA, and how did you get involved in it?
Well, I was lucky enough to be part of Dennis's campaign. I served as Dennis Kucinich's deputy campaign manager in 2004. But prior to that, I was very active, like a lot of my peers, in the early 80s in the military buildup at that time with President Reagan, who was embarking our nation on spending our scarce resources on nuclear weapons and improving, quote-unquote, improving a first-strike nuclear weapon capacity. So I began as part of the anti-war movement and the anti-nuclear movement, as part of the outside movement, and through time working in campaigns early on with George McGovern and others, I realized the importance of bringing that work inside the party. So my work began in the anti-war movement, and I began working for candidates like George McGovern, Reverend Jesse Jackson. Those were the candidates that got me involved, and then most recently, Dennis Kucinich.
Tim, one question that we get a lot here is the difference between a Dennis Kucinich or a Jesse Jackson who work within to change the Democratic Party, and people like Ralph Nader and others who work outside the Democratic Party. Why did you choose, because clearly the Democratic Party is not perfect and not as progressive as we want it to be. Why did you choose to work within the party rather than as a third party?
Well, my role model growing up was Michael Harrington, who hopefully many folks remember Michael Harrington, was a leader of what was called Democratic Socialists of America, who believed very much in this strategy of inside-outside. We live in a political system where the reality is we have a two-party system, whether we like it or not. Until we get proportional representation, until we get public financing and we can level the playing field, the reality is we've got to work inside the two-party system. So that's why we say we're the insurgency. We're trying to move the Democratic Party back to its progressive roots in the FDR tradition. So we believe very much that if you're going to be engaged in this game, ultimately, as we said, every great social movement ends in Congress. You've got to be part of this game. Very much respect Ralph Nader, all the great work that he did, just disagree on his electoral strategy. Most of my friends in the Green Party, I agree on the issues. That's what unites us. But ultimately, the reality is until we get public financing, until we can get Citizens United overturned, this gross amount of money that we're seeing in the electoral system, no third party's ever going to have a chance, and it's going to be hard enough for our fight inside the Democratic Party. I think the best person on this line is Jim Hightower when he says, I don't want a third party, I want a second party. We need a real progressive Democratic Party. That's what we're fighting for.
Once again, to our listeners, you're listening to News Views. My name is Garland Nixon. I'm here with Mark Levine, and today our guest is Tim Carpenter. He is the National Director of the Progressive Democrats of America. You listen to 89.3 FM WPFW here in Washington, D.C. At about 5:30, we're going to take a break. We're going to give the number out, and in the second half of the show, 6:30, I'm an hour off here. Maybe I'm on Central Time, I don't know. But at any rate, at 6:30, we're going to take a break. We're going to give the number out. I understand you may have some other people, some other guests, Tim?
Joe Libertelli, who recruited us here at the law school, we're hoping to give Joe a little bit of time to share a little bit about the law school. Its unique role here with PDA, and also to let the listeners know, I think it's probably one of the best kept secrets. So we'd love to see if we could get Joe on the air here when we come back. And then I'm going to also work to find Steve Cobble, who worked at Reverend Jackson's campaign and was part of our effort out there. We're going to go get Steve and Joe and have them come over at the break and get them on the phone here in a couple of minutes.
Excellent. And once again, to our listeners, to let you know, tomorrow, Progressive Democrats of America from 8 o'clock until, from 8 to 4? I believe
we're going to go 8 till 3:30, and then afterwards we're off to Busboys and Poets at 14th and D. We're going to continue on. We didn't talk about these guided conversations. They're being led by John Nichols from The Nation magazine. Mm-hmm. So John is going to take us over to Busboys and Poets, and we're going to continue our celebration with Jim McGovern and Mimi Kennedy, who's the national on board. And finally, Jim Hightower, who hopefully many of you know is the great populist out of Texas, will be joining us there as well. So it's into the evening as well, gentlemen. We're going to be going all day and all night here.
And I'll definitely be joining you over there at Busboys and Poets myself.
Wonderful.
A few more things as we come up on the half hour, and that is, you're talking about policy tomorrow. You're going to have members of Congress there. Talk to us a little bit about what policies the PDA would like to see the administration pursue, and keeping in mind now in the real world. We have to keep in mind what we're up against with the House, but what kind of strategy are you looking for from the administration over the next 4 years, keeping in mind the obvious problem in the House of Representatives?
Well, the reality, as you said, is we have a minority in the House, we have a majority in the Senate, but we have no illusions. Barack Obama by no means is a progressive. We understand that. What we want to see over the course of the next 40 to 50 days as we begin this or continue this debate on the debt ceiling and austerity is to have a real debate. What we need to be talking about is prosperity, not austerity. We can't cut our way out of this problem. We have cut the fabric of our social programs enough already. We're into the muscle right now and almost onto the bone now of these programs. What we would like to see as progressive Democrats of America, and what we'll be talking about tomorrow, is Keith Ellison's effort to introduce what's called the financial transaction tax or the Robin Hood tax. It's time that Wall Street begin to pay their fair share. It's time that we have a stimulus program to put money into creating jobs. So here tomorrow, Keith Ellison, by way of video, will be talking about reintroduction of that bill. Congressman Conyers will be talking about the Full Employment Act. These are the issues we need to put on the table as progressives. We don't need to be defending Social Security or Medicare and Medicaid. We should be proud of them. We should be talking about a revenue stream that will cut military spending and redirect that money, and we should be talking about taxing Wall Street. That's what the discussion tomorrow will be about, and building that movement. Just this past Wednesday, Progressive Democrats of America was part of an effort in 87 congressional districts around the country. Local citizens, PDA activists went to their member of Congress with these demands, and that's what this weekend will be about, is to continue that effort on the third Wednesday of every month. month and also to meet here in Washington with the progressive community, what we call the Progressive Roundtable.
So you're going to be having sounds like you're putting together an aggressive plan for the next 4 years.
Yeah, and I want you, if I could just hold the line before we break. I told you earlier the person I'll be moderating for us tomorrow is John Nichols, and we're hoping maybe he could join us. And as a matter of fact, it's our lucky moment.
Oh, boy.
Both John and Steve Cobble are here, so when we come back from the break, we can get John Nichols and Steve Cobble on the line with you.
Wonderful. We'll go in about 6 minutes. We'll go on a break, and so we'll be happy to talk to him after that. Also, I'd like to let our listeners know, after News Views, Robin Holden and Carol Tyson come on for a great show called Robin's Place. We're getting into the nighttime. It's great music. It's actually a virtual entertainment center. They have rooms with various artists such as Sinatra, Gloria Lynn, Joe Williams, Dinah Washington, Carmen McRae. So if you want some nice mellow mood music and a little bit of up-tempo, it's great stuff, great classic stuff that you'll love. It's called Robin's Place. It's every Friday, in fact, from 7 to 10. So, you know, after the energy of this show, it's probably a nice, you know, calming influence and some really quality music. So for those of you who haven't heard Robin's Place, definitely stick around after 7 and keep your dial here on WPFW 89.3 FM. And once you experience it, I'm sure that you will really enjoy a well-constructed professional.
Talking before you came on about President Obama's first term and how, particularly in the first two and a half years, he seemed to have compromised or tried to compromise with Republicans who didn't want to compromise with him. But he had a victory today. I would call it a victory. I'd be curious to know your views. The Republicans agreed to allow the debt ceiling to be lifted for 3 months. It's a start. At least they're not, and basically Obama said, look, I'm not negotiating with you on this. This leads to worldwide economic calamity and I ain't playing that game. And the Republicans said, all right, we'll give you 3 months. And I assume he'll say the same the next 3 months. He's also standing firm, at least so far, on the reasonable gun regulation. What does Obama need to do differently this term from last term? And is he already doing it in your mind, or has he not gone far enough?
We certainly have not gone far enough. What we need to do is continue to create that movement that will allow him and push him to move in the direction he so desperately needs to move in. He's got to stop worrying about the other side of the aisle and come sit down with the progressive side of the aisle and work with those members on the progressive side and forget about any illusions of bipartisan support on some of these issues and really hold the line. He's got to stop giving away those things that are vital to us early on in these negotiations. Yes, there's some movement now, but it's taken us a while to get there. The biggest frustration for many of us as progressives since day one has been him surrendering on single payer, surrendering on the question of getting the troops out of Afghanistan, and now here we are on Social Security. Should have never been on the table, and yet we still have to debate with him. So slowly, yes, he is responding. When you see the outcry of a majority of Americans who want action when it comes to gun control, he's responding to that. It's amazing what he wants to when it comes to executive actions on those things, whether it be on the gun control, he's moving in a good direction. Now we'd like to see that same kind of movement in regards to the jobs question that we spoke about and to protect Social Security and not be putting it back on the table. So yes, one small step in the right direction, but that's what tomorrow is about, to continue to organize that political base, to remind him that a majority of folks voted this last election to keep Social Security off the table, to protect Medicare and Medicaid, and to move us, as we said, away from austerity towards prosperity. So that's why tomorrow is very important, to gather so that we can continue to keep that work, not only here in the Beltway, but there's activists from around the country who'll be coming together who'll take this message back home, and we've got to make this a 50-state movement to keep that pressure on the president.
What would you like to see the president do with regard to jobs? I know John Conyers has a bill. I assume you support that bill. But be specific about what he can do to help jobs in America.
Well, we have to have a long-term strategy to begin to talk about converting military industries to meeting human needs. For every $1 billion we invest in the military, we lose more jobs on the domestic side of the economy. We need to work with Congressman Jim McGovern and others who are beginning that process that George McGovern began so long ago, and that is to put money towards redirecting military spending so we can employ more folks and get that money working more for us. Military spending is the most wasteful spending we can do. In regards to jobs, we have to move towards a green economy. We've got to begin to put that stimulus money to create those jobs, to begin to move us towards whether it be solar or wind, but to move us in the direction of a green economy. We can do that. The bill that Congressman Conyers is talking about is what was in the 70s, the Humphrey Hawkins Full Employment Bill, is to commit our government. There are good things government can do. We're part of that community in the Progressive Democrats of America. It's time for government to work to put people back to work. And we can do that by helping Main Street and not Wall Street. And the biggest thing that we'd like to see is a debate on what, as I said, what we call the financial transaction tax or the Robin Hood tax, to begin to tax Wall Street so that we can get the kind of money we need, $300 billion, that we can invest in this economy to move towards jobs for all.
For those listeners who want to find out more about PDA, or, you know, who want to find out what your organization is doing, who want to be a part of it, go to various meetings and maybe start something in their area or work with PDA in their area. What's your website and how can they go about doing that?
No, thanks, Colin. That's the most important thing, if nothing else today, is to encourage you to go to the website, pdamerica.org. You can plug in right there. We meet in our communities.
PDA,
and also we do phone calls on our virtual community to our issue organizing teams. So if you simply go to the website, pdamerica.org, we'd love to plug you in and have you be part of this growing movement.
It's PD America, not
right.
Two A's in a row.
Correct. Okay. PDAmerica.org.
.org. Okay, great. They can, our listeners can go there and certainly find out more about Progressive Democrats of America. And I understand that we're going to have a few more guests in a moment. Right now, you're listening to 89.3 FM WPFW. News Views. We'll be back in a moment.
Let's just give out the number real quick. 202-588-0893 if you want to dial in.
We'll be right back.
And thanks, you guys. Appreciate it.
Hi, I'm Ephraim Woolfolk, area bassist, teacher, and supporter of WPFW. And you're tuned in to member-supported WPFW Washington.
Hello, you're listening to Garland Nixon. I'm here with Mark Levine. And are you still there, Tim?
Yes, I am. I'm here, and as I said, we've got a couple of surprise guests for you ready to jump in here. I'm ready to pass the phone, and thank you for the chance. And if you guys are ready, I'll hand it over to John. He's ready to go. And I want to thank you guys for taking so much time this evening, and I hope that folks will be a part of this. And as I said, we're very honored that John will be part of the guided conversations tomorrow. He's going to help us keep us in line, but more importantly, John has been there for PDA for a long time, and we're very honored that he could find time to come in this afternoon. So I'm going to hand it over to John Nichols and let you guys do your official intro, and I hope to see all of you out here tomorrow. And thank you, Garland.
All right, thank you. And we're going to make sure we have you on the have you on here fairly regularly to find out what PDA is doing. You're listening to 89.3 FM WPFW, Garland Nixon, Mark Levine. You're listening to News Views. And who do we have on the line now?
This is John Nichols from The Nation magazine. How are you?
I am just wonderful, John. How are you doing today?
I'm very, very well.
Can, for our listeners that aren't familiar with the Nation magazine, tell them a little bit about it, give them the website,
sure.
Etc.
Well, The Nation is the country's oldest journal of opinion and the largest progressive journal of opinion. And it's at www.thenation.com. And then I do a lot of TV stuff and write books and things like that as well.
I didn't know The Nation was the old. I've known The Nation forever, but I didn't know it was the oldest progressive magazine. That's quite a tradition.
Well, it may be like the tallest building in Wichita. Yeah.
So what's going on with The Nation? What are you guys involved? What do you want to talk about tonight here on News Views?
Well, I'll tell you. Obviously, we're all looking at the transition here from Barack Obama's first term into his second. And it's exciting that progressives are going to get together and analyze it from that perspective because, you know, Barack Obama's first term was a tough one for progressives. Many of them knew going into the 2008 election that Barack Obama was not, you know, some big lefty, but they embraced the hope, the promise of change, and also, I think, got very excited about the prospect that America's first African American president could you know simply be transformational by the presence, by the fact of him becoming president would have great meaning for the country. And I think in some ways it did. But this is going to be a very different inaugural. This is not the Barack Obama of 2008, you know, the hope and change and sloganeering. Now you've got a Barack Obama who's had 4 years of experience and much of that experience with some pretty brutal assaults on him.
Yeah.
And particularly, I think a realization on his own part. I think he's a much more tested and tempered man because you know he's been through 4 years of people really throwing everything they could at him. And the significant thing is, after those 4 years, Barack Obama's reelected with 51% of the vote, more than 51%.
Mm-hmm.
That means he was elected with a higher percentage of the vote than John Kennedy in 1960. than Richard Nixon in 68, than Jimmy Carter in 76, than Ronald Reagan in 1980, than Bill Clinton in 92 or 96, and then George Bush in 2000 or 2004. That's a pretty amazing thing. He's also the first Democrat to be elected with more than 50% of the vote since Franklin Roosevelt in the 1930s.
I think Lyndon Johnson, right?
Yeah. So I think we want to talk about that. And we want to say, you know, when you've got this kind of mandate, don't govern cautiously. Govern with some energy. Give us all of what you got.
And what makes that also unique is that remarkable is that during that period, during the campaign period, that we had a very high unemployment rate. And that the economy was still reeling from the 2008 fall that it took, and that his opponents were trying to take every effort to pin that on him and to say take the position that the president can't get reelected with the economy in the situation that it's in, even though they created that, but they still used that argument, and it doesn't seem to have worked very well.
Well, I think that we should be a little bit cautious. Recognize that a part of this whole calculus is that they threw up a remarkably inept opponent. Mitt Romney proved to be a kind of uniquely awful candidate for president, and Paul Ryan was not nearly as impressive as I think many of his backers assumed. But what I think the significant thing is this: the Republicans said that the 2012 election was going to be a referendum on the economy. It's going to be a referendum on how government interacts with the economy, how government operates, how big it will be, what it will be. Progressives have always said the government should interact. The government should be big. The government should do great things. While Barack Obama didn't always say that during the 2012 campaign, that was clearly the choice that Americans saw. And so Barack Obama has been reelected with a mandate, a significant mandate, 5 million vote margin, overwhelming landslide in the Electoral College, 2 new seats in the Senate, 1.4 million more people voted for Democrats for the House than voted for Republicans. Overwhelming signal from the American people that in this referendum election, they want their government to actually do something. So the great test for Barack Obama now is, you know, what will he do with that? And it is a challenge because there are many, many interests pulling at him, many demands. He has to address the gun violence that we saw in Newtown and the unspoken reality that there's a Newtown every day in cities across America with thousands of people annually being killed in gun violence. It does not need to be. So he's got a great big agenda item there. He's also got a great big agenda item with, as you suggest correctly, the lingering unemployment, which in some parts of the country still reaches depression levels. He has many, many other challenges. His job going into the second term is, in my opinion, and I think this is something that will be talked about a lot tomorrow by many of the different speakers at this great forum at UDC, is to outline how government itself can actually address many of these different things. That's what gets us beyond the sort of, you know, small scale, small vision, talk about this issue, talk about that issue, to a broad vision. And what I'd suggest to folks, if they want to really, find a reference point, go back and read the second inaugural address of the last Democratic president to be elected twice in a row with more than 50% of the vote, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. When he got up there on the portico of the Capitol in 1937, he gave a speech that was all about what government can do and about the linkage between democracy and government, that when the people choose a government, it ought to be an extension of their hopes and dreams and needs. And I hope that President Obama takes at least an element of that in, because we didn't get enough of that in the first term. Mm-hmm. And the success of his second term will be defined by the extent to which he recognizes that the mandate he received has a personal component to him. A lot of people actually like him quite mm-hmm. a bit. Mm-hmm. But it also has an ideological component. People were told that if they vote for him, they're voting for government. They're voting for spending. They're voting for taxes. That's what Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney went on and on about. That's what the media talked about for month after month after month. Well, okay, let's do it. Let's have a vision of government that provides us with the health care we need, that provides us with the housing we need, that provides us with a whole host of other necessary items to live a free and functional life. And let's also have a government that can say, realistically, yes, you do have a right to bear arms, but you do not have a right to, you know, go out and slaughter kids.
John, I want to ask you.
It's a big agenda thing.
I want to ask you about something that Franklin Roosevelt didn't have to deal with in 1937, and that's a Republican House of Representatives. Roosevelt won every one of the then 48 states except two, Vermont and Maine, as I recall, and he had a massive majorities in the Senate and the House. Even though 1.4 million Americans voted more for the Democrats than the Republicans in the House, they draw the district lines, they cheat the game, and of course they have a majority in the House that Obama has to deal with. What strikes me is the way that the fiscal cliff was resolved. It may be a way for the future. I mean, you could say, well, the Republicans control the House, the Speaker decides what goes on the floor. If the majority of the Republican Party doesn't support it, it's not going to happen. But we've already seen twice in just 2013, I mean, in a short, you know, the year's only around 2 weeks, twice, both on the tax increase for the rich and also on aid to
Sandy,
yeah, victims of Hurricane mm-hmm. Sandy, that because Obama went above Boehner's head and talked to the public, Speaker Boehner actually scheduled votes in which the vast majority of his party voted no, but a tiny minority of his party plus the Democrats voted yes, and we got some things that, you know, we could argue they could maybe go farther. Do you see that this is a pattern for the future, that basically forcing through public opinion the Speaker of the House to take votes that even his party doesn't support, but that a majority of the House supports? Is that the way forward?
No.
No. Okay.
No, it is not.
Then what's the way forward?
And I'll tell you why. Because it only lasts as long as John Boehner decides he's got to do it. Mm-hmm. And it also only lasts as long as the majority of Republicans decide that they're going to let John Boehner continue to be their speaker.
Well, wouldn't the only alternative
They could change tomorrow and put Eric Cantor in.
Isn't the only alternative waiting for the election of 2014? I mean, what else can he do?
Well, no, there's another option. Filibuster reform. Mm-hmm. And that's a big deal. We need to change the rules of the Senate. That's going to be, I'm not sure they'll do it, but they should, and they have the option to do it next week. Filibuster reform allows the Senate to bring a bill to the floor and pass it with 51 votes, majority mm-hmm. rule. Mm-hmm. We don't have that currently.
Actually, 50. We got Biden.
What?
Only 50. Yeah. We have Biden.
That's right.
But we don't have that right now. What we have right now is a situation where you've got to have 60 people because the Republicans have used a backdoor filibuster to stop action from coming to the floor. Here's what I would suggest. I think you're exactly right. Using the bully pulpit, getting the House to allow votes, fantastic. One of the best ways to really back that up, though, and make it strong, is to do filibuster reform in the Senate so that the Senate can actually pass bills. Then the House is faced with the challenge of, okay, the Senate dealt with gun control. Are we going to do it?
Yeah.
Well, why aren't we doing it? Well, because John Boehner won't let us do it. See, we strengthen Obama's hand. His bully pulpit becomes dramatically more powerful if he can point to a house of government that's actually functioning. And then I think we can get someplace.
On filibuster reform,
made on the fact that Roosevelt had better majorities.
Right.
But to my mind, that means that Obama has to double up on the bully pulpit, get stronger, and also use every avenue he can, structurally and rule-wise, to get as far as he can. So, you know, I don't want to see compromise here. I want to see real energy. I want to see a focus on getting things done.
Let me just ask you about filibuster reform, because I absolutely agree with you. I mean, we still have to deal with the House, but we have to deal with the Senate, too. After all, he could have gone a lot farther in his first 2 years if it hadn't been for the Senate. They were the ones stopping him, not the House. Harry Reid has said he's going to do some filibuster reform. He's going to take away the two filibusters to get to a vote and make it only one filibuster to get to a vote. But I'm not even sure he's going to keep up the speaking objection for those who don't who aren't technicians here. Basically, the old filibuster was if you wanted to stop a bill, you had to keep talking all night and all day.
Had to filibuster.
You had to actually filibuster. That, you know, talk and they couldn't stop you from talking. Today, you just say, I want a filibuster, and you go home. But to bring back the speaking filibuster, which at least makes people put some windpipe behind their effort, I strongly support that. Reid seems like he's backing down from that. What can progressive Democrats do to help the Democrats do filibuster reform?
That's the exact right question for today, I'll tell you. And we will talk about that a lot tomorrow at UDC, where we'll have members of the House as well as potentially some other players who are really going to be a part of this debate, some of the unions that are very, very involved in it. And look, this is a big deal. I would suggest to you that if you look ahead to the next week and you say, what's the biggest deal, Barack Obama's inaugural address or filibuster reform in the Senate, because the Senate needs to do it next week. My gut instinct would say that the filibuster reform is more important, and here's why. I expect Obama's going to give a great speech. If that speech is going to have any chance of moving toward reality, we've got to make structural changes that allow it to do so. So progressives have got to work very, very hard to strengthen Reid's backbone. And this is a big deal. You know, we have been beaten too many times in too many fights because we've accepted a little bit of reform and not the whole thing. I will tell you that a halfway filibuster reform is like a halfway cancer cure. The fact of the matter is, it's great to have somebody doing a little bit to try and beat your disease or beat your ailment, but most of us would like the whole thing. And we want the whole thing because we don't want to have to deal with the pathologies again 3 months later, 6 months later, and even in some modestly lesser form. The filibuster, as it's currently engaged in, as it's currently used, is a tool to prevent bills from coming to the floor. It's not about the debate once you get there. It's about making sure that things don't get there. So right now, the filibuster is not a protection for the minority in any sense. What the filibuster is now is a tool by which obstructionists can prevent a honest debate. So the only filibuster reform that matters is one that says, when a bill is up, it can come to the floor. When it comes to the floor, then those who oppose it can fight it with everything they've got. They can speak. They can, you know, demand, you know, reviews of issues. They can work as hard as they want, but they've got to do it in public, and they've got to do it in a way that the American people see what's going on. You know what will happen then? I'll tell you what will happen. First off, if we had these filibuster reforms in place, instead of getting the stimulus that we got in 2009, we would have had a dramatically larger stimulus, mm-hmm. and that stimulus would have put dramatically more money into job creation.
We could have had universal health care, I think.
We'd have people working today because of filibuster reform. Right. We could have had a much better health care, and I'll tell you something else. You want some gun control? The only way you're going to get gun control, guaranteed, is if you have filibuster reform. That's the only way you bring these bills to the floor.
Let me quickly remind our listeners, because we have listeners throughout Virginia, Maryland, West Virginia, Delaware, all of those states have two Democratic senators. That means that if you were to call your senator at 202-225-3121, that's the Capitol switchboard, so it works for any senator, 202-225-3121, and simply ask your senator to stand firm on filibuster reform. Just tell them, you just think a majority vote should count. That's all right. You have to tell them. Remember, virtually everyone in our listening office, in our listening area, has a Democratic senator. They're the ones that can press Harry Reid to make the difference. If the two senators of Virginia and Maryland and Delaware and West Virginia were all to insist to Reid on filibuster reform, it might just happen.
Yeah.
You just did the most useful thing I've heard on radio in quite a while.
Once again, you're listening to 89.3 FM, WPFW here in Washington, D.C. My name's Garland Nixon. I'm here with Mark Levine, and we're talking to John Nichols of The Nation magazine. We've had Tim Carpenter on, and tomorrow they're going to have an event. It's going to be at the David Clark Center at UDC, and it's going to be called the People's Inauguration. There's going to be Congressman John Conyers there, Congressman Raul Grijalva. There will be a number of members of Congress and people there to discuss the progressive mission for the next 4 years. They're going to talk about climate change. They're going to talk about military-industrial complex, etc. You probably want to be there. Take my word for it. It's going to be from 8 to 4 at UDC, the People's Inauguration. John, once again, we've got a few minutes. If we could take a caller at 202-588-0893. Tell us a little bit about what's in the Nation magazine right now that we might, or online on the Nation that we may, some of the things that may be interesting that our listeners might want to look at.
Well, it relates to what we're talking about, and it's very interesting that you ask. You know, our lead editorial this week is about the second term. What this president can and should do with his mandate. And we've well outlined on the show that he has a mandate. And you know, part of what we say and what we'll continue to say is people need to recognize, they need to understand that we have reality here. Our side in these debates is not the minority. Mm-hmm. This is not a center-right country. This is a center-left country, maybe even a little more left than most people think. And so an awfully big part of what we need to do is to communicate to people that they have strength that they may not have imagined. It is very easy to feel disempowered in these times.
Okay.
Wall Street is more muscular than it's ever been. We've got billions of dollars coming into our politics. And yet the bottom line is that the people who gathered in Murrow at UDC, you know, these are people who have long-term historical proof that we can change big things.
Okay,
John Conyers, who will appear with us.
Yes.
John Conyers, who will appear with us, the only person that Martin Luther King Jr. ever endorsed for Congress.
That's awesome. Well, we've got some people on the line. We're going to start with Russell. Russell, welcome to WPFW.
Thanks for having me. I have problems with progressive Democrats. I think the reason that it's called Progressive Democrats of America is because the Democrats are no longer progressive, so they're trying to bring it back in. But it's damaged goods. It's got a bad reputation among the people, and justifiably so. So, for example, a number of us were working to try and get single-payer passed over the last couple of years, single-payer national health insurance like most of the civilized, industrialized world. And down to a person of the progressive Democrats, they abandoned us. So John Conyers introduced the bill, 676. There are about 90 members of the House who signed on. But one right after another went to this insurance industry written bill. It was conceived by the insurance industry. It was written by them. And it was pushed through by Obama to protect the insurance industry.
Well,
one of them, down to Congressman Kucinich, who famously wrote on a plane with Obama to Cleveland so he wouldn't oppose Obamacare, each one of them abandon single payer in favor of this insurance industry written bill.
Thank you, Russell.
So I think the progressives should justifiably abandon the Democrats.
Okay. Well, thank you, Russell.
And start anew from the grassroots.
Thank you, John. Did you want to respond?
I respect Russell's statements because I think his points are well made. And I'm sorry, we're getting a crosstalk here. I'm missing. But I respect what Russell had to say there. I think this is an important thing to understand. I don't have the same level of respect for the Democratic Party that Russell does and some folks do. I don't care what political party people use. I would be glad to see progressive and left-wing politics take place any place it wants to. If you want to return the Republican Party to its progressive roots, its anti-slavery roots, fantastic. That'd be great. If we can get a Green Party that would get out there and win elections, fantastic. That'd be great. If the Libertarians want to run on a Libertarian left, Noam Chomsky embracing platform, I'm all for that. But I also don't mind at all embracing the tool of the Democratic Party. I use any vehicle I can to get people as much health care, as much housing, as much of what they need. Now, it happens that the Progressive Democrats of America want to fight within the Democratic Party. And they've got a lot of most of the major single-payer activists in the country will be at UDC tomorrow, an awful lot of them, to gather together and say, you know, how do we continue to do the push? And I think it's absolutely appropriate to confront, and we'll do that. We'll say, yeah, but can we ever believe that the Democratic Party would do this? I want John Conyers to explain to me why he still believes that, and I think he will.
That's
what a dialogue is about. That's why it's a wonderful thing, is to have people, you know, wrestling with these issues, not from a position of weakness, but a position of strength. And I think going into a second term like this is a very good time to have these discussions.
Thank you. And I think one of the very powerful points that Tim Carpenter made a little bit earlier was that he, you know, certainly I'm sure he understands and to some point sympathizes with what Russell was saying and what people who like Russell feel like.
I think we all do.
But what Tim Carpenter said was, a balanced approach where Russell says stay outside of the party and fight from the outside. What Tim Carpenter is saying that his strategy is an inside outside to go be outside of the, which is what Martin Luther King did. Martin Luther King went to the streets and he protested and he argued and he griped. And then
he also talked to John Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson.
Right. And then he went behind closed doors and he talked to politicians and he strategized with those who he had actually problems with. And he went back out and he worked inside out and he was able to get some things done. So I think Tim's point was powerful, and it was that, yes, Russell, I'm with you, but I'm also with those who want to work from the inside, and I believe that, like Dr. King, whose birthday we'll be celebrating Monday, that that's a strategy that's about ends, that is about solutions, that it's not about, you know, fighting or just fighting. It's about really trying to ultimately have solutions. And I believe we've got Freddie on the line. Freddie, thank you for calling WPFW.
Yes, good evening, WPFW. Yes, my question is, I can't seem to understand, maybe I don't understand the whole meaning of filibuster. I need to know what is it, whether as a voting citizen in this country who votes all the terms and everything, why is it that we can't seem to, President Obama seem to can't get nothing done through by certain things in the party of each Congress or whether it's the Senate or whatever is fighting for? I mean, if Boehner is such head man and such headstrong person, why can't they vote him across like they did the president? Why can't they bring this new system about with voting these old people that's thinking these old ways out of these seats?
Well, Freddie, unfortunately, Mark sitting beside me here happens to be a constitutional attorney. So, Mark, if you would be so kind, explain.
Sure, let me try to explain, and I'll try to do it briefly. Basically, the filibuster came about because of an accident. It came about because the guy that was writing the rules of the Senate in the early 1800s forgot to include the rule about cutting off debates. You generally have a bill, it comes to the floor, you debate it for a while, then you pass a rule by the majority to cut off the debate, and then you have a vote. That's how they do it in the House. Well, the guy forgot to include that part back in around 1808 or so. The original Senate actually had it. And then no one really noticed it for a while. And then some intelligent senator who wanted to obstruct things noticed that if he kept talking, then he could actually prevent a bill from ever coming to a vote and defeat a vote. But it really was very, very rarely used. Fast forward to today, it takes 60 senators to actually get a bill to a vote. And now the Republicans are saying if they don't like something, that if they can just get 41 votes for no, suddenly 59 is no longer a majority. They need 60. So filibuster reform would return us really back to the early days of the Republic when a majority could still vote on bills. That's filibuster reform. As for the House, Speaker Boehner is chosen by a majority of the members of the House of Representatives. And because the majority is Republican, the Republicans decide amongst themselves who they want, and then they vote as a block mostly. And that's why Speaker Boehner's in charge. But Tim Carpenter's point is very important. More Americans voted for Democratic members of the House than Republican members of the House, and that's because they can draw the district lines, because they control state legislatures. So if that's not an argument for voting for a Democratic state representative in Virginia or Maryland, wherever you live, I don't know what it is.
This is another great show here on News Views, another great guest today. We've had Tim Carpenter, who is the National Director for the Progressive Democrats of America, and John Nichols of The Nation magazine. John, if someone wants to, say, follow you on Twitter, et cetera, send you some info, what should they do?
Sure. They can follow me on Twitter at Nichols Uprising. That's NICHOLS Uprising. They can also go to The Nation's website. That's, again, www.thenation.com. And you can email me off there. You can see some of the things we've been writing. In fact, we've got a big piece on the filibuster up today. And finally, they can come on out tomorrow. You know, one of the great things about what Progressive Democrats of America and some of the unions that are working with them have done is to create a forum where folks will be able to, on this inaugural weekend, not just watch it on TV or not just see the parade go by, but actually interact with sitting members of Congress. You know, John Conyers is one of the great epic political figures of our time. He'll be with us. Mark Pocan, one of the newest members of Congress, openly gay member, labor union activist, as well as other great people. Raul Grijalva, the guy who really led the fight down in Arizona against the anti-immigrant laws down there, as well as leaders of national unions, folks who are key players in single-payer fights. I mean, it's a kind of an amazing thing that in this case, what's going on at UDC tomorrow is an opportunity for folks not to watch the inaugural and not to watch the start of the next term from the sidelines, but to be there with the real players and to talk to them, to interact with them, taking questions from the crowd. So I think it's going to be, you know, this is a place where something, I would dare say even magic occurs. And that is where people start to realize that government isn't something that happens to them. It isn't something that happens far away from them. It is, in fact, something that they can be a part of.
Thank you very much, John Nichols of The Nation Magazine. My name is Garland Nixon. I'm here with
Mark Levine.
You've been listening to News Views. We're on every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. here on WPFW 89.3 FM. We have great guests. It's really, really a good show. We give you the opportunity to call in, so we look forward to interacting with you next Friday. Next, Robin Holden and Carol Tyson. They have Robin's Place. They're going to have some really good, if you like Sinatra, Gloria Lynn, Joe Williams, Dinah Washington, I think you're going to enjoy this show.
Thanks for listening to the just completed Public Affairs or News program. As a listener-sponsored community radio station, WPFW appreciates your feedback, whether favorable or otherwise. To provide your feedback, even if it is regarding one of our many music programs, simply email us at